Hi, I'm Naomi.
And I'm Kaylee.
Coming at you from the traditional unceded territory of the Coast Salish people. And this is...
Sorry, Murder.
Listener discretion is advised.
Everyone, Naomi's really sick. She wanted to be here, but she just can't. Please, join with me to say, get well soon, Nene. Now, I'm going to go ahead and share this story with you. But I know Naomi has a lot of thoughts on it. We were chatting about it before she fell ill. So maybe we'll do a recap when she feels better. Well, that's all for now, folks. And please, remember, drive safe.
On April 27th, 2011, 30-year-old Manbir and 27-year-old Preeti had just been married. Again. You see, Indian weddings are long, often spanning days. Manbir and Preeti enjoyed a traditional Indian wedding in India, and now they were back home in Surrey, BC, Canada, where they had a ceremony and celebrations with their Canadian loved ones. Their marriage was now formalized in Canada as well as India. After the day of celebration, the married couple was now on their way home. Around 10:30 p.m., Manbir was driving their car with Preeti in the passenger seat. They were near 128th Street and 72nd Avenue in Surrey when Manbir decided to pass a white Toyota 4Runner that was in front of them. Suddenly, as they were passing the 4Runner, the two cars bumped into one another. It turns out that Manbir had cut off the 4Runner. Oops. And they had a little fender bender. I don't know if it was one of those circumstances, maybe, where you go to pass someone and then they aggressively speed up to try to not allow you, or what if he actually did accidentally cut them off. But they had a little collision and now they pulled over. They were going to check for damage and exchange their insurance details, as responsible adults do. Accidents happen. Both the vehicles stopped and Manbir exited his car to approach the driver's side of the 4Runner. Preeti remained seated in their car when suddenly she heard several shots ring out. What was that? She exited the car to see and immediately saw the driver of the 4Runner holding a handgun. He turned and pointed the gun at Preeti. Terrifying. Preeti acted fast. She ducked and several more shots rang out in her direction. Bullets flew everywhere. They struck nearby buildings, including a house. And then the 4Runner sped off down the road, out of sight. Preeti had not been hit by a bullet, but she was rattled and raced to check on Manbir, who was clinging to life. Police arrived shortly after 11 p.m. Manbir and Preeti were both taken to the hospital, but sadly, Manbir died on the way. As they surveyed the scene, the police were shocked that no one else was hit by the bullets. It was apparent the shooter had no regard for where or who he was shooting, as the bullets were found all over the area. Initially, there was some discussion that the shooting death might have been gang-related, but police found no evidence to support any connection to organized crime, and they dropped pursuing that angle. Preeti was able to provide a fairly detailed description of the shooter. After all, she had looked him in the eye. She described the shooter as an Indo-Canadian male of medium build, with some facial hair on his chin, and he had been wearing dark clothing at the time. She felt that she could definitely recognize the shooter if she were to see him again. Given this description, the police found that it sounded familiar. They knew someone who owned guns, drove a white 4Runner, and who had had run-ins with police prior. His name was Samandeep Gill. So, pretty early on, he was identified as a suspect. They brought him in for questioning, and in the process they seized his cell phone, or actually cell phones, because he had more than one. The following process of building a strong enough case to secure charges against Samandeep would not be a fast one. It would take years of analyzing evidence. However, I doubt anyone could have imagined that it would take as long as it did. It actually took 7 years for this to go to court. It appears that the case sort of went cold for some time. All the while, the police requested patience from the community, and they insisted they were still formulating their case. Meanwhile, everyone in the community was shocked by this brazen and senseless murder and attempted murder, all due to a case of road rage. Manbir's sister said, "My brother did what any one of us would have done in that situation, which is to get out of his vehicle and exchange information." So true. Finally, in 2018, after a long wait, Samandeep Gill was charged for the 2011 murder of Manbir. When the court proceedings began, the Crown had one key piece of evidence. Back in 2011, they had seized Samandeep's cell phones and discovered an audio recording of the shooting. His cell phone, they say allegedly, but his cell phone captured the sounds of the entire shooting. How did this happen? It was believed that the recording took place due to a pocket dial from one of Samandeep's two cell phones that he carried. So the pocket dial was inadvertently recorded on his iPhone. Maybe like a voice message or a voicemail. I'm not sure. But basically, he had a lot of electronics and a busy butt. So what was on the recording? It sounds terrifying. Manbir's brother explained, "If the public listens to this audio, they will see that Samandeep hit my brother's vehicle. When my brother was approaching him, you can clearly hear Samandeep say he's going to kill him. Then, in the background, you hear him chambering bullets and rounds into his gun. Then Samandeep says, 'Yo, what?' And Manbir says, 'You hit me.' And then you hear Samandeep saying, 'No, no, 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 I didn't. Hold on.' And then you hear him begin to shoot." As the court proceedings began, Manbir's family thanked the Integrated Homicide Investigation Team and the RCMP. They said, "We've waited 7 long years for this moment, and we are relieved that there is closure in sight." They were grateful to finally have this be coming to an end. They're so gracious. However, everyone was in for a rude awakening. Okay, so we know this case took a long time to get to court. Yes. And we know that the homicide team had Samandeep's phone in their possession the whole time. They had the phone in 2011. And do you know from past cases that we've covered what is needed to hold on to evidence? They need permission from a judge. But guess what? They didn't have for almost 7 years. They did not seek the proper court order to keep the cell phone. They violated Samandeep's charter rights. Evidence revealed that the police were warned by 3 senior counsel, including their own RCMP lawyer back in 2007, that officers should not be ignoring Section 490 of the Criminal Code, which states police must get an extension order if they want to hold evidence beyond 90 days. But they didn't. We know the case went cold for a few years, and then the homicide unit picked up the investigation again in 2016. And at that time, they went to court to request an extension on their detention of the cell phones that police had seized years before. But they were actually advised not to apply for the extension because that would bring, quote-unquote, too much attention to their case. What? A memo even went out to officers telling them to avoid seeking detention on evidence orders in cases where doing so would draw the judge's attention to their non-compliance. Wow. Basically, the memo was saying, like, "Hey, look, we've gone this long without requesting an extension. It's going to look really bad if we do so now. You know what? On any of your cases, let's just not request extensions. Let's just lie low with our investigations." It's likely there were hundreds of files and cases impacted by this non-compliance. Imagine all the cases that were thrown out, the evidence deemed inadmissible. It is reported that hundreds of murder cases were affected due to police noncompliance. So, even though investigators were given legal advice in 2007 saying they needed to follow search and seizure rules in order to protect their investigations, those rules weren't followed. Due to this, the judge ruled that Samandeep's cell phone and the corresponding evidence gathered against Samandeep from the cell phones would have to be dismissed. And we know this is the Crown's main source of evidence, so their case completely collapsed. Thus, Samandeep was acquitted of second-degree murder for Manbir's death and also for the attempted murder charge from trying to kill Preeti. And that's it. Samandeep walks free today. Families of the victims were given hope, and then it was snatched away. Manbir's brother told Global News, "I couldn't believe it. It made me sick to my stomach that something like this could happen. We expected so much. We were promised so much. We tried to help the Crown as much as we could. We offered a $500,000 reward for information. They said we wouldn't need to do that. I guess because their case was so solid, or so they thought. They say, but this case is bigger than Manbir. This is about a lot of criminals getting off scot-free for a mistake. They have given the rights to the criminal. My brother had no rights. Yes, we're upset about our brother's case. What worries me even more is that every time there was a Section 490 breach, here will be another family sitting in front of you guys, and there will be another family there in the same position that we were in." Manbir's father said, "In my heart, we need justice." Indeed, they still need justice, but it will likely never come. Manbir was a Delta blueberry farmer, a son, a brother, brother-in-law, uncle, husband, and a friend. He was described as having a heart of gold. Manbir's family stated, "Manbir was a loving member of our family, and the void that his murder has left in our hearts can never be filled. He was a fun-loving person who is missed every day."
Before we draw this episode to a close, I would like to bring attention to a nonprofit in the Lower Mainland called Yo Bro, Yo Girl Youth Initiative. Yo Bro, Yo Girl runs strength-based programming and mentoring to cultivate resilience in at-risk youth and empower them with tools to avoid drugs, gangs, crime, and violence. Visit their website at ybyg.ca, and there's a link to donate on the site.
Sorry to love you, Olivia. Bye!
Outtakes!
Sasli Kalji, kihala, dike. Why am I sitting under a pile of blankets speaking Punjabi to myself? Well, for today's case, we're visiting Surrey, BC, an area that boasts a large Punjabi population. The general population of Surrey is just over 500,000 people, and 150,000 Sikhs reside in the area. We're grateful to have so many Punjabi people building Canada into the place it has become. Today's case involves Punjabi people, and of course we recognize that there are bad apples in any group of people, so don't be a hater. If you are Samandeep Gill and you're listening to this, don't come at me. I'm just reading what's in the papers and the court documents. I would have thought you'd change your name by now and hopefully done something to atone for that angry outburst. Some volunteering, or, if it wasn't you... Let's hear what went on. Did someone else's recording, was it planted? You know, let's hear it.
Yeah, so that was my telephone when I was younger. And, like, I could hear all the phones going off at one time because our upstairs was so small that, like, my parents had a telephone in their room, I had a telephone in my room, and, like, I could hear it go off. Anyways, you could set your ringtone to whatever you wanted. So I set mine to, "Hello." And then in the middle of the night, it would just go off and it would go, "Hello, hello, hello." And no one else was calling.
Oh, only your phone was ringing.
Yep.
No, I don't like it.
Same with TKTK.
TKTK. TKTK. Yeah. That's so creepy. After you send it to me, you should delete it.